Hello, this is Rabbi Eric Levy. I am pleased to bring to you the seventh and final aliyah of Sidrat Shmini in the book of Vayikra. This aliyah, the final one, continues from the last verse in the previous aliyah and discusses in very terse language, language which the Eben Ezra points out needs Torah Shebaal Peh to really fully understand, or to really understand at all how the details of the laws work. But it continues on in a very terse language on the effect that one impure item may have on another impure item when they come into contact or enter into their space. For instance, in a bowl, if you put something into the space of a bowl, the opening of the bowl, how does that affect it? And it also discusses shortly how to rectify the situation, either by shattering it because it's unsalvageable, or by dipping into a mikvah and waiting until the evening. The final verse from the sixth aliyah spoke about vessels made out of wood, and other clothes, cloth-based utensils, and how when they come into direct contact with the carcasses of the various kind of creepy crawlies and impure animals, that they have to be washed and to remain until the evening. We now continue in the same vein, but with earthenware vessels, whose impure state cannot be reversed. V'chol kli cheres asher yipol mehem el tocho, kol asher betocho yitmar voto tishboru. Any earthenware vessels, if any of these things, meaning the carcasses of rats and lizards and geckos and all the animals mentioned from verse 24 to 31, lions and bears and cats and dogs, the carcasses of them, not the live version of them. If any of them fall into it, that is into the earthenware vessel, it becomes unclean and must be broken. And as you can see, there's all kinds of things about what if they touch the sides, then they're okay, or the handles, and what if they fall inside, and then other food falls inside, what if they fall on the side of them, and then something falls inside. So there are a lot of details here based on the way the words are written, but that is oral law, not written law, and in this form we'll stick to the written law. Mikol ha'ochel asher ye'achel asher yavo alav mayim yitma v'chol ha'mashke asher yishateh v'chol kli yitma. Also, all edible foods that get wet become ritually impure. So first we had the utensils, and we saw two different types, that is functional items, vessels, clothes, and whatnot. And then we saw the difference between earthenware ones and everything else. And now we have food. And the question, and the law is that any food, once it gets liquid on it, and not any liquid, by the way, the rabbis, based on oral law, mentioned seven such liquids: dew, D-E-W, water, wine, oil, blood, milk, and honey from bees, that are sitting in an impure vessel, if it's liquid that can be drunk, asher yishateh, which apparently means unless it becomes foul and unusable, although I guess that wouldn't apply to blood, although it's possible that if the blood congealed, then it also wouldn't have that status. So it becomes ritually impure. V'chol asher yipom nivlatam alav yitma, tanur v'chirayim yutatz, tmeim heim, v'tum utmeim yihyu lachem. Anything upon which falls, the carcasses of the aforementioned creatures becomes impure, including the oven and the stove, which must be shattered. They are impure, and they shall remain impure. The tanur and the kirayim are also made of earthenware, and they were movable. But I guess the sense is, and don't think of our modern ovens and stoves. That's not what we're talking about here. Perhaps that God needed to express this because perhaps people would think, well, for utensils, things that just hold food, that's one thing I would shatter. But if it's a whole oven, which always has fire in it or is very large, so maybe I won't have to shatter it. So the answer is, alas, no. Ach mayan uvor mikveh mayim yeh tahor v'nogeh b'nevlatam yitma. However, a wellspring and a cistern and a pool remain pure. However, one that touches their carcasses becomes impure. And what that probably means is can be understood from the famous phrase, Hatovel Visheret Biado, that if somebody puts himself to a mikvah while he's holding an impure, dead, impure creature, so obviously he doesn't become pure because he's still touching an impure creature in his hand. It doesn't make a difference how good the mikvah is. The mikvah, however, if there's any of these ground-based, liquid catchers, remains pure, and the water in it remains pure, but a person who is in it, who touches a dead animal that's in him, even though the dead animal doesn't render the mikveh or the water in the mikveh impure, the person inside it would be. B'chol v'chi pol min yivlatam al kol zera zerua asher yizareya tahor hu. And if one of their carcasses of all those impure animals fall upon any planted vegetation of the type which can be planted, it remains pure. Meaning, as long as it's connected with the ground, then if dead rats fall out of the sky and land on standing wheat, that does not render the wheat or any other crop, for that matter, impure. V'chivtan mayim al zera v'nafam inivlatam alav tamehu lachem. But once water is placed on the produce, and then a carcass falls upon it, it is impure to you. Of course, this is talking about once the crop is cut. So essentially, it's pure while it's connected to the ground. It stays pure. It cannot be made impure while it's dry. But as soon as it gets a little bit wet on it, so then you are in trouble. Or at least you're in trouble if a rat, a dead rat falls on it, or a dead bear, or dead anything else. Now, since only what we call unkosher animals were in the previous list, God explains that tahor animals that died sort of on their own, that simply keeled over or didn't go through the proper slaughtering, their carcasses also render things ritually impure. But should an animal die? That is, even though you were theoretically able to eat it, anything that touches its carcass is rendered impure until the evening. Va'ochel, and one who eats from that carcass must wash his clothes and remain impure until the evening, in addition to whatever other sin that a person receives because of eating non-kosher food, and one who carries the carcass must wash their clothes and remains impure until the evening. And swarming things that swarm on the land, they are an abomination. They may not be eaten. And this is seemingly redundant from what was said before, although we'll see it kind of expands the idea of swarming into six-legged creatures and eight-legged creatures, where it didn't go before it just sort of stayed with four-legged creepy crawlies. But the rabbis learn from this redundancy that it's not only somebody who eats these things, but if you feed them to somebody else, there's also a sin involved. And anything that walks on all fours, anything with multiple legs, which would be six-legged creatures and arachnids, to everything that swarms on the earth, don't eat them since they are an abomination. Do not make yourselves abominated through all the swarming things, and don't become impure through them, as you will be impurified through them. And what I think that means is that it's not just a one-time deal. It's not like impurity pops off of the creature when you eat it, of a bug when you eat it, and makes you sort of temporarily impure, but the impurity sort of permeates your entire body. So it's not that you have tumah, it's not that you have impurity on you, but you yourself become sort of existentially impure. All of these rules regarding foods, ki ani adunai eloichem, not just foods, but becoming ritually impure, ki ani adunai eloichem, vihit kadishtem, vihitem kadoshim, ki kadosh ani, lo titamu et nafshotechem, chol sheretz haromeis al haaretz, ki ani adunai hamaleu etchem eretz yisrael, yolachem elohim, vihitem kadoshim, ki kadosh ani. Because I am the Lord your God, and I have made you thoroughly holy, and you must remain holy because I am holy, so do not impurify yourselves with any of the swarming things that crawl on the earth, and I am the Lord that took you out of the land of Egypt to be your God, or to be a God for you, v'yitem kedoshim, and therefore you must remain holy because I am holy. So it's two things. One is we remain in a holy state because God raised us up to be that way, and it's an imitatio Dei. We try to imitate God. He's holy, we're holy. But ultimately, the responsibility of having to do so is because he took us out of Egypt for this express purpose. Therefore, by rejecting this express purpose of being on a very high holy state, we might as well, I guess, not have come out of Egypt at all. Zot Torah ha-behima va'of v'chol nefesh ha-chaya ha-romeset b'mayim v'chol nefesh ha-shoretzet al-aretz להבדיל בין הטמאו ובין הטהור ובין החיה הנאכלת ובין החיה אשר לא תאכל. These are the instructions. This is the instruction set. This is the rule book for mammals and birds and all breathing live things that travel in the waters and all the things that swarm on the earth. So that covers your overall types. These rules are set down to distinguish, really for the Kohen, but for everyone to distinguish or separate between impure and pure, between animals that may be eaten and animals may not be eaten. So that really sums up the crux of this entire chapter 11. Not just a question of what you can eat and what you can't eat, but what that you eat makes you impure or worse, even an abomination. And not only just eating, but touching, falling onto things, and all kinds of contact that can render something impure, the way electricity jumps from one thing to another, and if possible, how one returns to a pure state.